ज्ञानचिनिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकः चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। Vihariyarte natvam shochitam arhasi. One who has taken birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. All right. Well, first of all, thank you very much for the welcoming kirtan. Whatever philosophy we have to speak, we can simply appreciate, even without philosophy, how this Hari Kirtan directly appeals to the soul. Is it not? What do you think? That now we're going to discuss about soul and about God, a very deep philosophical topic. Maybe not very easy to understand all this deep philosophy. But the Hari Kirtan, and this one is a complete stone-like person, stone-hearted person, or unless one is very offensive towards Krishna, then simply upon hearing this Kirtan, one will appreciate that, yes, this is very soothing. Immediately we feel in touch with our original spiritual nature, which is being discussed here in a preliminary manner in this verse in Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna speaks one of the axioms upon which the knowledge which is developed in Bhagavad Gita is based. So this point that just as we know death follows birth, we say as sure as death, so also as sure as birth. If we see someone who's alive, we can think that at some point they have to die. And if we see somebody that has died, we can know they have to take birth again. That's why traditionally in India there was not so much, even now, there's not so much lamentation over the death of the body, because people understand that anyway it had to happen and they've gone somewhere else according to their karma. Many times I've seen in my, 28 years in India and neighboring countries, many times I've seen people have passed away, and not in every case, but in many cases it's accepted, just alright, they've gone, even maybe very close relative, mother, father. It's not out of callousness, but out of philosophical understanding. They've gone, they had to go. They've gone, in every language of the world, when someone dies, we say they've gone away. Chale gaya. He's gone away. Chale gete in Bengali. How do you say in Russian, when someone dies, they've gone away? On who show? On who show? I'm sure I didn't get the pronunciation right, because Russian pronunciation is very difficult. Can you say it in Latvian? Vinchai smirts. In Latvian. Whatever the language may be of the world, in every language, when someone dies, they say gone away. Kannada? Hortu. Horu. Tulu? Tulu, how do you say in Tulu? Poya. Konkani? Gelo. Same as Bengali. Chale Gelo. That's because they're Goa Saraswat Brahmin. They come from Goa, from Bengal. The language is similar to Bengali. So in every language of the world, it's accepted when someone dies, they've gone away. Vedic knowledge teaches us that they've not just gone away, but they'll be going to some specific destination. That when he died, generally the term death in Western understanding is considered synonymous with finishing, or the end, it's all over. But if we say someone's gone away, that doesn't mean that it's finished. It just means they've gone away. It means that whatever they may be doing here is finished in this particular role, but that someone's gone away doesn't mean that they've ceased to exist. It means they've gone away somewhere else. So this is accepted as an axiom in Vedic knowledge. Even that axiom, there is, we'll find here in Bhagavad Gita and in other Upanishads, that axiom is not just given blindly. There is some reasoning behind that. But it is not demonstrable by any material means, because we're not dealing with any material subject. We're dealing with the matter of the soul. People say that, give us scientific proof of the soul. By scientific, they mean that which is materially ascertainable. But the soul is not materially ascertainable because it's not material. So to ask for a materially ascertainable proof of something that's not material is stupid. We should understand that the knowledge of the soul is a different subject matter to all other kinds of subject matters. It requires its own methodology. Just like if we are to study linguistics, then there's no use to bring a Bunsen burner. Bunsen burner. Remember from your first days in chemistry class? It's only used in the first days in chemistry class. That's about as far as I got, so now I only you can use that example. So the methodology of chemistry may be very useful in chemistry, but it has no applicability in linguistics, which is a different, completely different kind of discipline. So if people say give proof of the soul, and they expect to give in terms of physics, chemistry, or biology, that in itself is a ridiculous proposition, because it's a completely different kind of subject. Just like if we were to say that in linguistics class, one might be asked to show how most contemporary Indian languages derive from Sanskrit. So will knowledge of calculus help us to demonstrate such a thing? One may be the world's greatest expert in calculus, but that will not help at all. It has no applicability in the field of linguistics. So in the same way, this spiritual knowledge, it is a different field from any other field of knowledge, and it requires its own methodology, which is more subtle than that of any other field of knowledge, because it is the most subtle knowledge. Raja vidya raja guhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyaksha bhagamam dharmyam susukam kaltam avyayam. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes this as the king of all knowledge, the most secret of all secrets, the purest knowledge, and that which is to be experienced. It is experienced, it directly gives happiness to the soul. Now, when we speak of knowledge, we generally think of something that is to be academically accumulated within the mind. But here, Krishna speaks Tachacha avagamam. It is to be experienced. This knowledge is not only to be, it is not simply a matter of academic accumulation, but it is to be experienced. Why is that? Because it is atma-gyan, this knowledge of the soul, and we are the soul. So it is something that we have to practically experience. It's something like at a gross level we can give an analogy that knowledge of aerobics. So one can, when one learns how to do aerobics, is that, it's not very popular in India. You know what aerobics is? It's not so popular here. Okay, let's say yoga. How to perform yoga. Everyone, that's a better reason. Everyone knows what yoga is. So it is said that if you perform this asana, this will be good for such and such a function of the body, and if you perform another asana, it will be good for another function of the body. And by performing that, one can practically experience how now all my muscles are getting stretched, and my head feels clearer, and I feel lighter. So it is practical experience, it is on the bodily level. So the knowledge of self-realization, that is something which we can practically experience on the spiritual level. However, the other extreme of mere sentimentality, that should also be avoided. If people say, well, spirituality is just something that you feel and you experience, but they don't give any reference to Shastra, then we should know that it's cheating. Because anyone can come and say anything. Well, you feel this, and that's spiritual life. But what is the basis? There should be some proper basis. That's why in our Krishna consciousness movement, we always emphasize knowledge from Shastra. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. I'm not coming here and saying, I am Bhakti Vikas Swami, I know everything about bhakti, and I will say something and you will feel bhakti in your heart, because I am here and I am a great bhakta. We don't say any such thing. We say that whatever we have to say is based on Bhagavad Gita, because that is the pristine authority of spiritual knowledge. And that this knowledge is very subtle means that it has to be experienced. Or sentimental. So here Krishna says that for everyone who is born, they have to die. And for those who die, they have to take birth again. Now, we may ask for some evidence of this. And actually, there is what we could call, even by standards of mundane science, there is plenty of evidence to suggest, of course by mundane science you can never really, it's very difficult to prove anything unless it's on the very gross platform. But we can say there is, even by mundane science, there is sufficient evidence to suggest that the passage of the living being from one body to another can be accepted as a fact. Of course, mainstream science doesn't accept this because it seems the atheistic tendency is very strong in modern academics. Although by fully academically accepted standards, researchers of accredited and accepted universities have done research into this, and there is sufficient evidence to accept that even from the what we could call the mundane scientific point of view, that there is birth after death. However, if we ourselves want to investigate this very thoroughly before we're convinced, it will take us a long time to do so. And even in while we're researching that, we will have to rely on certain axioms. In every field of knowledge, if we are to undertake study of any field of knowledge, we have to accept certain axioms. Just like in mathematics, we accept that this figure indicates one, and we accept that this figure indicates two. We could argue about it, but we wouldn't learn anything about mathematics. And in mathematics also we accept that we accept as axioms that there are no square roots of negative integers. It's an axiom, because as soon as it can't be the square root of a negative integer can't be a positive integer, and as soon as you multiply together two negative integers, it becomes positive. So it's accepted as an axiom that there are no square roots of negative integers. Of course, it comes in higher mathematics that there are square roots of negative integers, somehow or other. But the point I'm making here is that there are certain axioms that we have to accept if we are to progress in any field of knowledge. If we challenge at every stage, we can't learn anything. You go to school in a geography class, the teacher says, Beijing is the capital of China. I don't believe it. Prove it. Pretty difficult to prove. How are you going to prove it if someone who doesn't want to accept it? If you just accept that, well, pretty much everyone in the world accepts it as a fact, then on that basis you can also accept it. Otherwise, how are you going to learn? So in accepting spiritual knowledge, preliminary axiom is that for the soul there is actually no death. Na jayate mriyate vākata chinnāyaṁ bhūtvā bhavitā vāna bhūyaha ajo nityaṁ śāśvata yaṁ parāna na hanyate hanyamāne śarīre. Lord Krishna states here in Bhagavad Gita that for the soul there is never birth or death. When the body dies or is killed, the soul does not die. Because the soul, unlike the body, is by nature eternal, indestructible, existing immemorial, since time immemorial, will continue to exist. So, this axiom, if accepted, is obviously going to make a profound difference in the way we perceive the world. If we think that everything is finished at death, then there's no need for spiritual life. There's no meaning to spiritual life. There's no meaning to anything, for that matter. Then we become like a table or a chair. Table, so when it's chopped into pieces, or maybe just it falls to pieces due to age, then it's just thrown out. So if we think that we are the body, and when the body is finished, everything is finished, then we become no more important than a table or a chair. And then there's no meaning to murder case in the court. Why did you kill that person? What's the problem? It's just like a table or a chair, you know? I was feeling angry, and I chopped a table to pieces to let out my anger. And I was still angry, so then I chopped up my next door neighbor to pieces. So what's the difference? It's just a combination of material elements. What's the problem? So, well, that's a human being. It's a human being, well, that's a table. So what's the difference? There's no need for murder laws if the human being is intrinsically no more than a table. And no need for any law. Why should there be any law? Because there's no particular meaning to anything. Just when the body is finished, everything is finished. So why should we bother regulating anything? What does it matter about anything? The very fact that there are laws to regulate human society, and particularly laws against murder, presupposes the understanding that life is more important, or particularly they've given importance to human life. Human life is more important than the existence of inorganic systems. Why? Why should we think it's more important? If the human body is simply a complex arrangement of chemicals, then why should we consider it so important? Why should there be murder laws? It's wrong to kill a body. And even if we say a complex arrangement of chemicals, arrangement means someone arranged it. Arrangements don't take place just by chance. Just like I see in this temple has been built, it is an arrangement whereby people can come and worship the Lord. It means it's an arrangement. Someone conceived of the idea, and then they chose the particular spot of land, and they called an architect, and maybe gave a concept, and they built it like this. This temple is an arrangement. There was some conscious planning behind it. So if someone asks, well, who designed and built this temple? And they said, no one. What do you mean, no one? Well, you know, just one day there was a big cyclone, and after it was all over, this temple was here. You see, with this, all these designs of Saraswati in the doorway, and these shlokas written on the board in Sanskrit. It just all happened by chance, you see. It was a big storm, and then, you know, just by chance. And we could say, well, it doesn't seem very likely that all these shlokas would come in place out of nothing, with no prior design or arrangement, and just it would come, just happened to come that all the different pieces of dust and dirt or whatever would come in just such a way that the shloka exactly corresponding to that of Bhagavad Gita would come right here. And right next to it, another shloka from Bhagavad Gita. And just by chance, well, you could say that, well, you know, by chance anything is possible. If there were enough storms, then maybe if there were billions of storms, then maybe after one storm, this would all happen. It's highly unlikely. These cyclones, they're known for destroying buildings, not for making buildings. Nor is it likely that even in a billion cyclones, you'd get even one word of Bhagavad Gita formed, what to speak of several shlokas. So this idea that the whole universe has come into being by chance, from a big explosion, it's the most nonsensical idea current in human society. And that's saying something, because there are a lot of nonsense ideas in human society. There are many, many, most of the ideas in modern human society are just nonsense. Just like this, it's being promoted very much. I'm sure all of you Manipal Nivasis are very much aware of it, that young boys and girls should come together and enjoy themselves and have fun. But in actual life, there's no fun in it, actually. It may seem like that, but the inevitable result of young boys and girls coming together and having fun is babies. And looking after babies, it's not, you don't see that in the advertisements or the movies. You just see the love affair. They're walking off, and all of a sudden, a violin, no one can see who's playing the violin, but anyway, it's a movie. So the violin starts playing, and this is all nonsense. It's just imagination. This romance. The actual result is babies. Of course, abortions are also very popular, but that's also sinful. And the result of abortions is that you in your next life become aborted also. You get this sinful reaction. So anyway, all this promotion of love and romance, it's got very little to do with actual reality. The actual fact is that, and this idea that marriage, we'll get married and it'll be so wonderful, actual marriage means you work hard and you get some money and you live together and it's a damn struggle. That's the actual fact. And if you can live in some pigeonhole apartment, then you think, oh, well, I'm doing quite good. So there are so many nonsensical ideas in human society. Drink Coke. That's another nonsense idea. What's the benefit of drinking Coke? There's no benefit except to some big fat American somewhere who's making millions and billions of dollars from people drinking Coke. It's no benefit to you. You just gug, and that's, how much does it cost now? 12 rupees or how much is a bottle of Coke these days? 10 rupees? Gone. 10 rupees gone. But you, anyway, your parents are sending, so jitne paisa de ho, fek do. Like this. So many nonsensical ideas are there. But the most nonsensical idea, at least as far as I have seen, is this idea that this is promoted by big scientists. It just shows how foolish people can be, even if they're supposedly intelligent. That there was a big explosion. There, first of all, there was nothing. Then there was a big explosion. Nothing exploded. And then everything, the whole universe came into order. It's nonsense. It's so ridiculous. Nowadays we laugh because in the medieval times they used to think that if you sail far enough you'll fall off the edge of the world. We laugh. What a silly idea. But this is a much more stupid idea. That there was nothing, there was a big explosion, and then the universe with all its diverse order and complex systems came into being. So we accept as axiomatically correct the knowledge given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, which we didn't even begin to discuss because we didn't have that much time. But the first axiom that is accepted is that we are not the body. The body is temporary. But we are eternal spirit soul. We never die. This Manipal is called the knowledge city of India. It would be better called the ignorant city of India. Because here they're filling you up with more and more so-called knowledge. But the more you have of this so-called knowledge, the more you forget the real knowledge, which is that we are eternal spirit souls. So how long does the aarti go on for? How long does it go on for? 15 minutes. Alright. So we have to finish now because of the aarti, and then afterwards you meet everyone and listen to this. Yeah, prasad. Okay, alright. Time's up for now. I've written a few books which are available here, and I have some CDs of lectures in Hindi for those who are regular comers. For those who are newcomers, please take this book, The Science of Self-Realization. Okay, quick. Where's The Science of Self-Realization? You don't have The Science of Self-Realization here? Yeah, bring it. For those who are regularly coming, you may like to see some of my books. This is Brahmacharya in Krishna Consciousness, Ramayana in simple English, Hindi lectures as featured on TV, My Memories of Srila Prabhupada, Gita, Jai Srila Prabhupada, or Journey of Self-Discovery, do we have the Journey of Self-Discovery? Quick, come before the aarti begins. Those of you who are newly coming, we request you to see this Bhagavad Gita as it is, and many other smaller books are available also. So, Hare Krishna, now is the time for the aarti. Afterwards, we can meet. Hare Krishna. Speak on spiritual knowledge or primary phase. It's a very great topic. What Krishna spoke in Bhagavad Gita in synopsis has subsequently been discussed in great detail by subsequent generations of devotees. And there's the aarti then. So it comes to the same thing. So anyway, this Krishna conscious movement is meant for giving this knowledge of the difference between the soul and the body, and the soul's eternal relationship of service to the Supreme Soul, who is Krishna. Are there any questions? How many of you are coming regularly here to these meetings? Learning about Krishna? You're all studying Srila Prabhupada's books? Reading Prabhupada's books? That's good. I'm sure you can appreciate there is an intrinsic difference between Srila Prabhupada's books and those of any other books that you may have read. Is it? All other books that we may read, they simply provide us different kinds of knowledge and imagination about this material world. But Srila Prabhupada's books give us knowledge of this material world from a different perspective, from the perspective of Krishna, and also knowledge of the world beyond this material world. In other books we won't even get any information that there is. We won't get information that there is even any world beyond this world. This Krishna speaks of in Bhagavad Gita. The world beyond this world. This world is manifest and unmanifest at different times, but the spiritual world is ever existing. So is there any question? use the mic. You're saying they have no time because they have so much pressure of studies, but they don't go to parties? So you invite them here, then they can get knowledge, or you go and distribute books to them. Somehow give them the knowledge. Maybe they don't have so much inclination. That may be. Who has no mind? Yeah, that's what you were saying. You're saying that the present generation has no mind for spiritual activities because they're so busy with material activities. And the previous generation was maybe too complacent to take it seriously. That they would do it, they would do religious activities, but they were mostly quite complacent, not very serious actually about spiritual life, about Krishna consciousness. So whatever it may be, old, young, educated, uneducated, whatever it may be, chant Hare Krishna, study Bhagavad Gita as it is. Everyone should do it.